This is Ann Baker with Brian Fitzherbert and Paul Kinetra on Talking with Ann.
Good morning, Ann. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Now, you guys are hitting on the head where the parallels are, and, you know, even the mentioning of the Iron Dome. Iron Dome needs to be maintained, and that means having a supply chain of spare parts when things go down. And even so, when you design something like the Iron Dome, there are possibilities where things don't happen. There are human factors in breakdown of the process. And it's scary because, you know, that's meant to protect their people. And the Israelis, you know, they all serve in the military. And again, you know, reflect that back to the United States. We don't have anything, you know, you think about the Second Amendment, a lot of people take that for granted. God forbid anything horrific happens. But coming back to the border, the security aspect, you know, you guys were talking about, right now, all this Biden administration is doing is processing. They are not vetting. They are not investigating. And no one in their sane mind would do this in their own personal life. Think about people coming into your home, people coming into where you work. There are security measures. There are hardening that goes down to make sure that people are not there that should not be there. I mean, this is why employment, you have IDs just to get in the building. And when you bring it down to the border, this is where it gets scary, because if we don't do something on our border, we're going to see something, God forbid, probably similar to what's going on and what Paul has witnessed. It's a very scary situation.
More than scary. We know that the security of our country has broken down under Joe Biden and Barack Obama and this administration. We see it every single day. We see the pleas even now from blue mayors of big cities who are saying, and Kathy Hochul now, you need to give us $2 billion plus to take care of all these immigrants that you, sir, have allowed into our country. What do you think the people are going to do? There are still Democrats out there who are saying, never Trump. And this is something where Trump tried to close the border entirely. And now we've got a president in there who has left our border wide open to terrorists, to sex traffickers, to labor traffickers, to fentanyl and worse drugs even today that are being trafficked and killing over 100,000 of our people, of our citizens every year because of drug overdoses. Yeah, I agree, Luke. This is terrible. It's a terrible thing.
It is. Paul, I'll tee that one up for you, and I'll follow.
Well, look, I mean, let's just say it straightforward and flat out. With the untold miles of our border that are not secured, the lack of resources going towards it, and the fact that we know that there are numbers and numbers and numbers of people not from Latin America crossing the border, from other countries, from countries that we do not have any kind of good relationships with, and countries and individuals that wish to do us harm, how far away are we from having an incursion just like Israel had? How far away are we from having people rounding up some munitions and everything in Mexico and in Latin America, where the law enforcement is not the strongest? How far away are we from them getting a bunch of pickup trucks and storming across a border and coming into towns along the border and wreaking havoc and killing Americans? Right? If you're a terrorist organization, obviously it's hard to get your hands on a nuclear bomb. It's not so hard to get your hands on some assault rifles in Mexico and Latin America, round up a couple trucks and a couple hundred people, and storm across our border, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Mexico is a terrorist country. Unfortunately, every official there has been bought and paid for and threatened by the cartels. So they are a terrorist country. I'm just wondering, who do we turn to? Canada is a communist country. Mexico is a terrorist country. Who do we turn to when we finally get smart and vote out Joe Biden and this administration? Will Donald Trump be able to find all of the good patriots he's going to need to fix the country from all of the ills that have been given to us by Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and that crew.
And how much can he do himself, though, right? Because Americans themselves need to wake up and take some ownership here. Because let's all talk. How many people do the three of us know that complain about the border situation, complain about what's happening in America today with the lack of security, and then only turn out to vote in a presidential election? And they're not helping Governor Abbott in Texas showing up in gubernatorial election. They're not helping his state legislature showing up in state-level election. And they're not helping their local officials who are trying to fight the right fight and to kick out some of these crazy sanctuary state people, in their elections that affect them the most. So people need to wake up. Here in New Jersey, in our last state assembly race, in the race that I ran in for state assembly, 30% of our population showed up. So it doesn't matter. If Donald Trump is president, that may fix a lot of things over Joe Biden. But on the state level and the local level, we're still totally exposed. So all these people that are complaining need to get their butts out of their sofas every single year for like 10, 15 minutes and go vote.
Yeah, if only. Brian.
Now, Paul's right, and this is what it comes down to. The will of Trump and being elected is part of the battle. But as he pointed out, when you see New York City, you see New Jersey, you see all these things where these sanctuary cities and sanctuary state policies, and it's turning them all into naked hypocrites because they're saying that they can't take this, but they're the reason it's happening. They're the magnet. And I think what's going to happen, and from a political aspect, in an election year, a presidential election year, what's going on could be possibly the best political thing that could happen to Republicans and conservatives, because what happens when things get so bad, it slingshots back the other way. And the idea of mass deportations will become common thought again. The fact that there should be criminal deportations immediately. I mean, what happened in New York City with the NYPD officers getting jumped by four or five illegal aliens, and then they're out on bail minutes later and giving the media the finger? They're giving America the finger, the double barrel middle finger, because they laugh at us. They laugh at Joe Biden. They laugh at our border. And until this hits home, which it's starting to do when you start having this impact from a school standpoint, English as a second language, overrunning our schools, overrunning our hospitals, people are going to start to fight back and say, we've got enough problems here in our own country with our own citizens. We cannot take in the world's population, because if you let the third world in, you become the third world.
Well, I think it's happening. Good morning, everyone. This is Ann Baker, together with my co-host, Brian Fitzherbert, and our guest, Paul Knetra, who is an assemblyman. Gentlemen, thank you for being here on the show. Brian, you're always on the show every other week, and I thank you for that. Paul, it is good to hear from you because you have taken an interest in going outside of our own borders, if we actually have them, and going to countries that face destruction. Paul, have you ever found that the Chinese may be involved in both of these wars, literally wars, particularly when I remember being told and reading something about biolaboratories, critical and dangerous, that were possibly Chinese, that could be found in Ukraine particularly?
So that's something I wouldn't have any color on, and to be honest with you, I obviously know that the Chinese are seeking to exert their influence over pretty much the entire globe. I mean, whether you go to Africa or Asia or South America, they're funding projects. They're funding ports, they're funding roads and bridges, they're negotiating with countries who can't pay the debt and building military institutions. And we have certainly seen Chinese nationals coming across our southern border. But in terms of the Israeli or Ukraine conflicts, I wouldn't be qualified to mention that.
Brian, do you have anything? Nothing to add?
Yeah. No, I would say that we don't have anything concrete, proof, or any kind of evidence. However, we have to know that the proxy aspect of allies, the proxy aspect of involvement that China has tried to do infiltrating, for instance, the United States, what they've done here, I'm sure they're doing in other strategic locations. Look, they want Taiwan at some point, and they look at this situation in Ukraine, look what Putin did to go in the 21st century and try to realign borders, and what the response to that was from the United States. And then you go and see the same thing with Hamas go and basically punch Israel in the nose, knowing full well that they can't take them on themselves, that they need some proxy support from Iran, who's then in proxy support with Russia, then who's in proxy support with China. So China's looking at those two conflicts as, look what's happening here. You got two conflicts, two battles going on, two wars, and if now's the time to go after Taiwan, it's now. Because, oh, look at the polls. You know, President Trump, who slammed China, who stopped China's economy from growing through tariffs and other negotiation tactics and decisions, now would be the time. So I don't think there's anything directly that we've seen that we can comment on, but I would say that this is giving a decision-making, tactical and strategic decision for China, because should Trump get in, the window is closed for at least 4 years for China to do something like that and quote-unquote unite as one China. And I don't say this like with glee, but the next 8 months, 9 months are going to be very telling, if not quite dangerous, where these linchpins happen. God forbid we get pulled into a World War III scenario where one battle started with Russia and Ukraine, another battle with Israel and Hamas, and then China going on the attack with Taiwan.
Well, what do you make of the fact that this president, so-called president and commander-in-chief of our country, has allowed over 31,000 Chinese nationals to enter our country, knowing with what you just said that they are waiting to take over Taiwan, and that Taiwan, we need to protect Taiwan, just as we needed to protect Ukraine a hell of a lot earlier than we began giving them the weapons that they needed. We need to have been doing that now ever since this actually came to the fore as something to be worried about. What do you know about it, either one of you?
I'll give it to Paul first.
Well, I've actually been to Taiwan, right? And the scary situation about China almost inevitably going over there is that there's no basis for reality in what they're doing. Taiwan has always been independent from China, right? And they've essentially just decided that Taiwan is part of their territory, and that they're going to take it over, right? And that precedent, if the U.S., and again, we can debate all day if the U.S. should be the global police or not, but if the U.S. is going to be the global police, what kind of precedent does it set that a country can essentially unilaterally decide that, hey, this is part of our territory, we want it, and go take it? And we saw... We clearly saw what happened with weak leadership when we draw a line and Russia would step over it, and we draw a line and Russia would step over it. So what deterrent is there to have China keep from going over there? And really, with Taiwan being an island, what can the U.S. do to prevent this from happening, right? I mean, short of bringing all our battle ships into the area and risking a direct conflict with China, it's a scary proposition.
Yeah. I think what Paul's saying is spot on, because that's the debate that the Republican Party is having right now internally with whether or not we go from one extreme to the other, whether we are quote-unquote world police or we do things that are strategically and tactically necessary for United States national security, or full-blown isolationists, you know, somewhere in between all that. And what he's pointing out, you know, Taiwan has a capability that, God forbid, if this attack on Taiwan to unify, and this is the problem with, you know, United States policy, diplomatic policy, identifying China and Taiwan as a, you know, one China policy, which Trump tried to challenge, unfortunately, and I'm sure he'll challenge it again should he get elected. But all these things, you have a massive issue because, as Paul pointed out, Taiwan's an island, and if you're moving a lot of this strategic and from a naval warfare standpoint into the South China Sea and everything in the neighboring aspects for a direct conflict, you have supply chain issues, you have overarching economic issues, notwithstanding the warfare issues. And whether or not we get involved directly or indirectly, whether it's supplying weapons or not, but Taiwan does have a capability that is like Iron Dome. It's not specific, and I can't go into details, but they have a capability to defend themselves for a prolonged period of time. And at that point, what is Taiwan known for? They are known for semiconductors, where a lot of the products that you, me, Paul, and anyone listening uses every day. What kind of impact does that do to the world economy and from a supply chain standpoint? And even further, this is another reason why China wants to do this, because they want to displace the United States as the lone superpower. They want to be the superpower. They want to be the one that dictates, quote-unquote, world order. And again, the United States, the voters, and our leaders have to make a decision. How is this affecting American citizens and our country? What direct impact or indirect impact is this going to be in making a decision to engage indirectly or directly by either supplying weapons or, you know, even escalating further? And that's a complicated thing. And we know that Trump is unpredictable, and he understands from a transactional standpoint that if someone's going to do something, you hold them accountable. Joe Biden, he says don't, one word, and they laugh at him, they give him the finger, and they do it anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen more of that than we want to, with people disrespecting our country because of the leadership, so-called leadership that we have. Taiwan is something, though, that really is, it's a frightening prospect to think that we would have to have our own Navy involved in some kind of warfare should China begin sending their ships off the coast of Taiwan in order to invade and take over the island. And I know that we've given a great deal of money. We've given over $80 million in grants so that they can purchase our military equipment. But all in all, they've ordered themselves $14 billion worth of military equipment. So they are trying to arm themselves well enough so that they can do some damage to someone who might invade them, that is China.
No, absolutely. And take it back to the Navy. What's the point of a Navy? It's to protect shipping routes and everything from that standpoint. And if we have that supply chain that goes out there, obviously we know a lot of stuff that gets made in China that we use every day, that becomes another aspect of that. And that's where the national security aspect, why we need to bring manufacturing and other things back home from that just flatline national security standpoint, right? People save money for an emergency. So they don't, and they have it, so they don't have to use it. But they have it in case they have to. Same thing with having guns, ammunition. You hope you never have to do it. You see a carry license. You carry to protect yourself. God forbid, hopefully you never have to use it, but you have it if you need it. Defense stockpiling weapons, you know, like the United States, ammunition, et cetera, building weapons. You have them. You hope you never have to use them, but should it happen?
Brian, you're involved in the weapons industry. How much of a stockpile does America still have after taking care of Ukraine and sending things to Israel?
I would say generically we have a dangerously unprepared situation from an ammunition standpoint. When it comes to building support from a naval standpoint or Air Force standpoint, I mean, this is, you see it in the news, right? Air Force has a delinquency in terms of pilots. You know, they have like $30,000, $40,000 signing bonuses. They still can't get pilots. Why? Because in the Air Force, pilots barely get to fly in terms of training and everything else in between, mostly because things have gotten extremely expensive. And from a naval standpoint, we are nowhere near where we need to be from a ship standpoint, whether that's, you know, destroyers, whether that's other warships. We are significantly lacking, and even the submarines that we're building out until the 2080s, you know, that stuff takes time. So I don't think we're in any situation, and Trump kind of stopped the bleeding a little bit from the Obama administration, where I've said numerous times on your show, you know, the military was bastardizing. If they had quantity four or something, they were using two to be mission ready and using the two as spare parts and to support a supply chain because they weren't ready. This is a huge problem, and we have this stuff so that we can be prepared. God forbid something like October 7th happens or 9/11 happens, that we can get ready and go. But right now, when we make these decisions, we aren't doing a replenishment or a supply chain aspect that's, in my view, sufficient.
Cybersecurity. Just how safe is America? We are talking about Ukraine and Israel, and we've seen how their security, their defenses, had to have been lowered or manipulated or had holes blown in them for what took place to have taken place. What about our cyber security? What about our electric grid? What about our defenses with regard to those two topics?
Yeah, so cybersecurity continues to unfold, and I'll let Paul jump in here too, but the fact that the risk management framework that we are still constructing and the technology that we're still advancing and the things that we are changing, because it's all source code, right? You're all writing code in. Everything can be written and everything can be challenged. Once you have something, you have to protect it. You can use it for attack. You can do all kinds of things. And there's a huge aspect of a human error in terms of the design of that. So when you're talking about cybersecurity, this is becoming a requirement in all, and you know, all DOD related procurements going forward, and it wasn't before. And that means you got to retrofit previous deliveries with cybersecurity protections, because who's listening? Who's trying to hack? Who's trying to get into your system? And that's kind of the scary thing when you have too much reliance on computers, and you know, you think Terminator and Skynet.
Yeah, Paul.
It's scary. I don't think the average American realizes how vulnerable we are on that front and what the repercussions are, right? It's not just as simple as, okay, somebody took control of your computer and, you know, they're ransoming you to get it back. You know, there's thousands of attempts at intrusion into our grid and our infrastructure on a daily basis coming from foreign entities, right? And that ability where they could just flick a switch and turn off our lights and turn off our power grid, that's a very, very scary proposition. And the amount of data that's being collected, you know, whether that's through break-ins into individual companies where, you know, they're selling information on the dark web, so there's probably files out there on so many individuals that include social security number, name, date of birth, email, phone, security questions, what your mother's maiden name was, right? Then you add that into the advent of AI and the fact that people are getting phone calls that, you know, sound exactly like their daughter or their son, you know, making it seem like, hey, mom, I'm trapped, I'm in desperate need of help, I need money, and are falling for that more and more, and the attempts themselves are getting more sophisticated. You know, you combine that, and it's a real witch's brew of danger for our country. You know, we've got to do something fast, because our adversaries certainly are putting a lot of state money behind growing their capabilities, and we seem vulnerable at best.
Brian, you're involved in the weapons industry. Is the weapons industry focusing on that?
What I can say is that there is requirements and that there is awareness of that. And there are specific decisions that are made not to, to engage even with from a supply chain related issue, getting parts out of certain places, right? You don't get parts out of China that go on anything that's manufactured from a weapon or vehicle standpoint in the United States. And I know that there's a huge push from DOD-wide across each of the branches, including Space Force, to get up to snuff with regards to this, because, you know, there's land, air, and sea in terms of battle, but there's also going to be cyberspace. And a lot of things are connected. Obviously, the internet and and that kind of capability broadband has allowed us to connect in a way that is, you know, instrumental to how we do things every day, but it also creates some very, very dangerous situations like Paul was talking about. And, you know, even what he talked about, even more so, you know, your banking system or any other thing that could be wiped out should precautions not be taken. In terms of being able to control, like, for instance, drones, people think about that, right? You see Middle East or you see particular helicopters, right? The helicopter that was found during the bin Laden raid, and one of the Navy SEALs was unable to blow up the last piece of the tail, which had classified information, and Pakistan took that. They sold it to China, and China's been trying to reverse engineer that capability for stealth on helicopters. So you have all these things that are going on that you have to be aware of to protect that capability, because, you know, you go to war, you think you know what the other guy's capable of until all of a sudden something happens and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this kind of technology existed. And, you know, it's shifting away from a boots on the ground conflict or battle, which could unfold with someone like China, and more so a cyberspace activity where you're going after infrastructure-related things to bring down a country or fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Could be even company.
Several countries. Yeah. Linda, good morning. You have a question that we can then answer in the next segment.
Maybe I have a comment.
Yes.
Now, as far as the debate concerning the World Court, I could answer that, and I can be a part of that discussion any day in three words: no, not ever. And concerning Taiwan, we have, I guess in my limited knowledge, the best way I could discuss that is to say we have a treaty of sorts with China, with Taiwan, and that which has been signed off by the Congress. I mean, probably one of the only ones we might have left, and maybe. And so we do have an obligation with Taiwan. And it's sort of the way that treaty, I'll call it, is written, is it's not that we would engage personally, sort of, this is my feel, but we would, that we are obligated to assist them. Bigly. How bigly? Militarily? I'm not quite sure, but we may be broaching that.
Yeah.
If any, I think we do probably broach that dialogue. Now, we have nothing signed with Ukraine. Now, however, what we do have with Ukraine, we have our word out there what we will do and that we will assist them. So, I mean, if you look at it, and you were right, I feel you were right, that obviously Ukraine should have been dealt with a long time ago. And I'll say maybe under I'm stuck with Biden. I think maybe he should have jumped in a lot sooner.
My co-host Brian Fitzherbert and our guest Paul Knetra, Assemblyman. Which district is that? Ocean County.
So I think we lost Paul.
Uh-huh.
Because he had another meeting to go to.
Ah,
but
all right.
I believe he's the 10th district.
All right. This is a scary time for us. And the fact that Paul is brave enough to go travel to these places and apparently has the time to do so, it's almost... It's not an expedition, except, I guess, for information. And when he comes back with all the information that he's gathered, it really makes a difference. But talking about Taiwan,
yeah.
We've got Illinois, who, as of January 1st of this year, has allowed illegal immigrants to become policemen. Policemen, yeah, in the state of Illinois that can arrest citizens of this country. We have military. We've got Dick Durbin saying that illegal immigrants should be able to join the military to show how deeply set they are in becoming Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you were talking about Illinois, that's exactly where my mind was going, because now Dick Durbin's trying to push that because we have such pathetic recruitment numbers in the U.S. military that we should start opening up to illegal aliens.
Yep.
And let's take a step back on why we have low recruitment in the military. It's because of this woke virus that has infected DOD. And remember, the United States military has three actions, three things that they need to do. Protect the American people, break things, and kill people. That is all they need to do. And when you are not ready because you are infected with this woke, just absolute woke virus, that instead of your capability and making sure that you can meet these extraneous standards, so that under unbelievable circumstances that most people can't even understand, to be able to carry out a mission and survive and come back. And unfortunately, there's a lot of things that need to be worked on. But that's why. Nobody wants to be part of a United States military that vilifies people just because of where you stand on political issues. There has to be cohesion. There has to be a team. There has to be all this stuff. And what Biden and even Obama before that have done to desecrate DOD by injecting politics is exactly why we don't have these recruitment numbers. And then pivoting to Tricky Dick Durbin here, senator from Illinois, talking about, oh, we need to bring in illegal aliens. First of all, illegal aliens that are here are not vetted, like we've talked about in previous segments, right? And you want to have them get into our military ranks? Like, this is absurd. It's like they are intentionally trying to destroy the United States. Look, we get it. Democrats, those in positions of power, and have openly said it. Congresswomen in New York have openly said that they need more people in their district so they can stay in power. I mean, they're saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, the census.
All this aspect with illegal aliens needs to be addressed. Because what Trump is talking about, what he's written down in op-eds, is he's going to do a mass deportation, the likes of which this country has never seen, that's going to make Eisenhower's Operation Wetback in the 50s look like child's play. And it has to happen. There are too many here. It's not sustainable. They're not vetted. And we don't know who they are. Get in line and follow the law and do the process. Don't want to do that? Do not come.
Well, we've got over 150 countries whose citizens have left their mother country to come in caravans, planes, trains, automobiles. Yeah, to come to our borders through a terrorist country of Mexico, which allows it. And you know a lot more about what we need to do along the border, particularly for protection, as someone involved in the weapons industry, Brian.
Yeah, so look, remember again what happened during the Trump administration. He developed this return or stay in Mexico policy that basically said, guess what, Mexico government, if anyone's coming to our border, you're going to use your troops and you're going to hold them in Mexico until we can review and vet them. What else did Trump do? He built 500 miles, 498 if you want to be technical, 498 miles of Trump border wall, of this 30-foot rebarb, steel, everything under the sun, and we replaced existing wall. We have a 2,000-mile border, give or take, right? There are some natural barriers. There still needs to be work to be done. Walls work. We know that. They keep saying, oh, we'll just build a ladder or we'll cut through it. Well, the point is it's supposed to prevent it long enough so that Border Patrol can respond, arrest you, process you, and deport you. And truthfully, you have to go to new levels now, because what Abbott has done down in Texas, governor of Texas, as much as it's horrific, it's politically astute, because it's brought attention to this, right? Why do you do protesting? Why do you do certain actions? To bring attention to things that are being ignored. The media cannot ignore anymore that there is an invasion, an actual invasion at our southern border. And you need to do all the other things that are the magnets that are attached to this. You need to end chain migration. You need to institute E-Verify, not just from an employment standpoint, but if someone wanted to open a bank account, if someone wanted to go to Sam's Club to send money to a foreign country. All of these things, you have to make it utterly impossible for these individuals that their first act on this soil is a criminal one, and stop trying to make excuses for it. Yes, we have an asylum process, but a lot of times it is fraudulent claims that happen, and then you have a 2 or 3 year process before you show up in front of a judge. And truthfully, there should be detaining. There should be detaining, mass detaining of these individuals until that court or that judge sees that individual. All these things have to happen, and nobody has the will. And, you know, the Senate and the House are talking about another immigration bill, which we're supposed to see the verbiage of that come out today or tomorrow. Again, why is this happening in an election year? Because the Democrats know this is a losing issue. And the Republicans, as Trump has pointed out, should under no circumstances hesitate to say that we want XYZ. We want full funding for the border, not processing illegal aliens coming into this country. We want to have the ability to end chain migration.
I think we might have lost Brian. Well, he may have inadvertently cut himself off from us. But everything that he says, having to do with the border, we need to put in place. And under Biden, Obama, that's not happening. Democrat, call me. Tell me what a wonderful thing it is to have an open border like this. Tell me how wrong Governor Abbott in Texas is to put up chain wires that will keep people from, after having crossed the river, will keep them from entering into Texas. Tell me how bad that is. Tell me how good Mexico is in pushing these people through the border. Tell me how good the Democrat politicians are who are allowing this border to stay open. And then tell me some of the good effects that having, they say it's 9+ million. It's way more than that. The gotaways who have been allowed to cross over the hills and the areas in California or Arizona, these people are gotaways because what they're carrying with them and perhaps bringing along with them, holding the hands of small children that will be sold into sex trafficking, this is what we must stop. This is what we must end. And we have yet to do that under the Democrats. Not under Republicans, under the Democrats. Are all the Democrats part of the New World Order? Are all the Democrats part of the class of powerful who want to join with the billionaires of the World Economic Forum to remove the borders of every country? Why? So that they can use the population of all of these countries for their own usage? They want to make the United Nations, which is one of the most corrupt organizations in the world today, as we have seen members of the United Nations, UNRWA, who were part and parcel of the October 7th massacre. They were part of the terrorist organization. Do we not understand that the United Nations is simply a part and parcel of this World Economic Forum that wants to take over all of our lives? Is it so difficult to understand? Brian, I don't know. I'm so fearful that our politicians, those who want the military and the police to be part of the illegal immigrant job offerings, I'm so afraid that all of these politicians that have ever attended the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, that they all want to be the powerful, the mighty, and the rich who will take away the borders of all of our countries to make us into a one world order, all of whom are in the middle class, will be taken as prisoners by the rich and the industrialists.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you got to remember these individuals, they have no problem kicking the boot on the throat of everyone below them because they're at the top, right? So they don't care, and that's why they push socialism. That's why they push a destruction of borders and nationality, and they want to have one world order. They want to have one world government, all this kind of stuff. And they can't stand that there's something like the United States that still is a superpower and that pushes freedom, because these people don't want freedom. If you have freedom to protect yourself, if you have freedom of thought and education, then they can't control you. And that's what they want. They want their way, or they want to do everything they can to destroy you.
Yeah.
There's no compromise with these people.
Yeah. It's the old, as you said, the boot on the neck of the middle class who have paid the taxes, who have looked and watched as countries have fallen, as our own border has been attacked and allowed to be open to anyone who wants to come in. It's a pretty terrible thing, Brian, but I want to thank you for giving us your time and bringing in Paul Canetra, who is a friend, as well as an assemblyman here in New Jersey. I don't know. Do you have any final words for us of what we must do to be aware of what's happening in our country today?
Yeah, what I'll say is do the uncomfortable. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to your coworkers, talk to them about politics, talk to them about these issues. Because if we continue to either stay in bubbles or don't talk to each other or get really divisive, everything that we're seeing and that we're experiencing is just going to get worse and it's going to escalate. And we see that, unfortunately, on the national stage. And until people have this stuff affect them, look, I get it. People are busy. People have their lives. People have their careers. They have their families and everything in between. There's a lot of stuff going on. And the economy, it sucks right now. Things are really bad. People are hurting. But we've got 9 months of a brutal general election that's going to engulf media and TV, radio, etc. Pay attention, do some research, ask questions, interact with people, talk to people in your family, talk to people who disagree with you, and try to have these conversations. And yep, it's going to get heated. Yep, it's going to get really possibly complicated, and people may just cut you out. But have these conversations, because if we don't, the idea of us and our constitutional republic and allowing this to continue to be the strongest country and the strongest model in the history of the world is going to continue to get dents in the armor. And eventually those dents in the armor are going to crack.
Yeah.
And we just need to be able to continue to engage, have that optimism. Our best days are still ahead, that things are challenging now. We have a rotting bag of oatmeal guy, unfortunately, he has dementia in the White House right now. And we got potentially 9 months to change this.
Well,
remember that. Talk about it. It's crime. It's immigration. It's economy. Those are the only three issues you got to talk about, because that's what affects each and every one of us every day.
Brian Fitzherbert, thank you. Thank you, sir. Take good care of that, Luke, and give my love to Catherine. And I look forward to having you on air again. Please take care and continue to spread the word, as we all who are patriots plan on doing. Thanks, Brian.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.